kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me right now, we've got Cole Martin and Scott Smith. How are you two doing?
I'm waiting for him to interrupt me. See? I knew it.
Exactly. Who the hell knows me as Scott Smith online? It's okay. Carnage, damn it.
Carnage. Scott Carnage
or
Smith.
Or the twin stick pun guy. How's it going,
guys? I used to say that, though, when he'd say my name, and then I was just like, you know what? At this point, everybody knows it now, so whatever. Yeah,
go ahead, Cole.
I'm a fan of the real names on this show. Uh-huh. Otherwise, I'd be Fatty McGee or something. I don't know.
Like, at this point, even my husband calls me Eternal, and then, like, Joe says, Cole. I'm like, who?
I like to keep it real on the show. Real names, real people. Mm-hmm. That's how we are on this show.
I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but Cole ain't my real name.
Well, that's what you go by, so you shut your face.
Especially when you call your kids by their first letter of their names.
My kid, I don't even use letters for you guys. I do that in my mom's groups. They're A, C, and E, but for you guys, it's 1, 2, and 3.
The three.
I think I flipped
Joe and Shiz or something.
So, and actually said. I said number one's name on accident, and I was like, oh, I caught my own self. I was like, I didn't even mean to do that, but yeah.
That'll learn you.
We have a guest that's listening to us ramble.
Hey, we do, and you're just going on and on. Joining us from Green Lava Studios, Eduardo Ramirez, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me as well.
Do you have a long story to tell us, like Cole's telling us about our kids?
Not at the moment.
Give Scott a second. He'll get you going.
He will.
If not, he'll interrupt you once you get going.
Yeah, and think of some bad puns that I can add, right? Right now, Eduardo's just planning his puns as well. So, right?
Yeah, we'll see.
But Eduardo, you are here to talk about the game Bird Cakes, which just released recently. For the people who don't know what Bird Cakes is, give us the sales pitch. What is this game?
Oh, man. It's a shooter. It's a randomly generated shooter about flying cupcakes that kill flies. So, yeah, it's a dual stick shooter. So that's pretty much it.
I know, Scott, you are the professional when it comes to twin stick shooters. And I'm sure you have plenty of questions to ask. So I'm going to step back and let you handle things for a little bit.
I wouldn't call myself a professional when I've only made it to wave 12 so far in the game, like you. But
all right,
yeah, I got some work to do. I got to still work on beating the game because it's not an easy game. It's definitely I've really been enjoying it. But like I said in the review from the past show, it's definitely challenging. But I think there's a lot there for everyone that, you know, any type of. I see you guys cater to, you know, all different skill levels with the upgrade system. Eduardo, you want to go into detail more about the upgrade system?
Well, it's optional. I mean, you can totally win the game with the default weapons or on flying skills. But if you need some extra help, and you can totally upgrade your flying cupcake. So,
right.
Oh yeah, it's kind of optional.
I need the extra help.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I play a lot of twin stick games, as they know, and they're saying here, but I definitely, you know, it's not easy at first. You have to, I have to learn the enemies and stuff. If I want to do it without upgrades and stuff, I definitely got some work cut out to do, but, I'm trying to save up for the double firepower upgrade. I have not done that yet. That attack must be awesome.
Oh yeah. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
But you can totally do it with normal powers.
Have you done it with normal powers?
Oh, that's the only way for me.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's bragging awesome. Over there, talking about how good he is.
Yeah, actually, I can't because I just saw some guy that made the completed the game in 30 minutes. Wow. And my best time is 38, so I have no idea how he or she did it.
It must always be fun when you guys are amazed of like the developers get beaten by their own game.
Yeah,
that must be interesting. But
it's just amazing. I don't know how. I really wonder. I would love to see how he or she played the game.
Yeah, for sure. And that would be helping, you know, good strategies and stuff. I'm sure there's people out there, you know, obviously you guys gotten people like reviewing like SML and covering, you know, covering with different streams and YouTube and stuff. I see the games getting a lot of attention on Twitter and stuff, and you're, you know, online and pretty cool.
I've seen some Twitch players doing some things that I didn't imagine to do. So
yeah,
like what?
Like they built a small, a really small wall. Mm-hmm. In the top of a cherry, the dying cupcake, with only like six blocks of sugar blocks. I didn't expect that.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess they, you could also get creative and build your own like mazes, make it more like tower defense-y, I guess you could say, with those sugar blocks. I like the, I like the way that you can customize and do that. It's kind of adds another layer of cake. There's the first bad pun. Yes.
The first of many, I'm sure.
Maybe. Maybe this time I will let him do more of the talking, though. Because, you know, who wants to hear my bad puns anyway?
Let's keep it coming. I love them.
Oh, man. But that brings me to another thing, that just something funny that I've seen recently. And Joe actually brought my attention to it after playing the game. I didn't see the credit screen yet because I didn't beat the game yet, but which I will soon do, I promise. You know, I'm trying to make it through, but it is a challenging game. But anyway, the credit screen is actually rather funny. I'm sure you want to mention anything there.
It's just a story that this guy is making, so. I don't mind. We don't mind. So
I got a kick out of it. And Joe did too.
Yeah,
sure.
It was pretty funny credit screen. It's nice to see someone take the credits and just have fun with them instead of listing this person did this, this person did this, and just have fun and tell a crazy story.
Maybe we shouldn't give any spoilers. We should just tell people now you guys need to get Bird Cakes because it's an awesome credits game. Nah, but it really is. I'm all joking aside, the game is fucking fun. Like I was saying in the review, it's just, you know, it doesn't have to be super deep or anything, and it's obviously, like, you guys know, it's a, you know, you guys made it an affordable like game that's not super deep, but it doesn't have to be. It's just fun.
Thank you for saying that.
So how long ago did the game start development, or where did the idea come from?
This idea came up from a game jam. It was called the Indie Speedrun, something like that. The whole idea came since they gave us like a theme and an item. The item was a candle. So we were wondering, what can we do with a candle? Mm. Where can you find candles? So in a cake. So how can you move the cake? Let's put some wings on it. So that's how it was born. It's a flying cupcake.
And how long ago was that?
Oh, that game jam was in 2013, but we paused that project because it was a game jam game, you know, 48 hours to make a small game, and we delivered some other games. We decided to take that concept and make it a big thing.
Nice.
That's really cool. I'm always amazed at the games that come out of game jams where people only have, mm-hmm. like, 48 hours or something similar to create a game, and just the crazy, crazy ideas that come out of those.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you guys know about My Name is Mayo. It's a game about a mayonnaise jar. you click it and that's it. It eventually wears a bikini and stuff.
Now we need to know more.
Yeah. Actually, you can find it in Bird Cakes. The thing is, the random ideas, the better ideas comes from game jams, I think.
Ah.
The beauty of a game jam is just that it allows the creators to be free. And even though you have certain restrictions or rules or whatever it's for your game, you can do whatever to those. Like, there are not a lot of people who would have heard candle and immediately thought flying cupcake.
Yeah, since we have to. It's a brainstorming process because
it definitely allows you guys to be very creative, and that shows for sure with that. That's cool.
Yeah.
So where did the heroine of a, or not the heroine, but the maiden, the damsel in distress being a cherry, where did that come from?
Heroine. I didn't get the question. Like, where did she came from?
Where did the idea of the cherry being the victim of the game that you have to protect, where did that come from?
The main concept was about the same story. Some cupcakes were eaten, and then you have to revenge. But now we wanted to protect somebody, so that's why Cherry was born. We need somebody else.
And Cherry is Birdcake's girlfriend.
I don't know. They like each other, but I don't know. Maybe he's in the friend zone or something.
Friend zone. Oh, man. Was it like a first date gone bad?
Maybe, yeah.
And why are so many bugs just after this one single cherry?
I know. Have you seen this bird telling this story? Well, in the... there's this screen where you have to pick up between two items.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yes. There's a bird talking this weird story. So that bird has the answer of why is everything happening? Why are there so many flies? Why are there so different kind of flies? But of course, I don't want to spoil anything, but it's all about existence and just hating existence.
That is super deep. I did not expect that from this game.
Yeah, I know, but it's if you read the story, if you get into that, you might wonder why. Who is that Kyle guy? There's this Kyle guy that made that.
Interesting.
Hmm. I hear a dog in the background.
Kyle might be your dog. Cole, I was going to say.
Not mine.
No, that's my dog.
Oh, okay. Usually it's Cole. She has a bunch of dogs. She also has a chicken that likes to crow as well.
She has a whole farm, basically. Come on.
I do. I have like 40 chickens and 9 ducks.
Birds and pigs.
Kentucky chicken.
And by yeah. in her yard, I mean something different on the grass.
Yeah. Those are a whole different kind of bird cake.
Oh, God.
Fucking carnage, though. Yeah.
So, I was just curious about, did you also work on the previous game with your team, Green Lava? I mean, I don't know how long you were with the Green Lava Studio for Spheria?
Yeah, I've been working with them, with the main three developers.
Oh, okay.
For 8 years now.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the main concept was made with the same team. And all our games.
The same engine, I take it, because it looks very similar in like the
it's style. We're using Game Maker Studio.
Nice.
Mm. So it's a simple tool that you can use, and it worked for us, so that's cool.
Yeah. I just wanted to add that I enjoyed that one a lot too, and I'm sure Joe and Cole, you guys played Phoenix Furia back then?
Oh, a while ago, yeah.
Yeah, it was a little while ago.
I actually did not. I remember seeing it play, but I actually didn't play it.
Oh, yes. How dare you?
I know. I don't know how I managed to miss any games at this point, because there are weeks where I review like 15 games back to back.
You know, guys, I believe you made a review about Phoenix Furia or mentioned it in a podcast before.
We probably did. We've covered so many games on the show that I can't even remember last week, let alone like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, you guys are hitting like double digits of reviews every week now. It's insane. Like,
yeah, wow. it got kind of out of hand.
That's amazing. Congrats. Work.
I don't know if that's something to be congratulated about. I'm so tired. I'm so tired.
Feel proud of it. I will be proud.
So on that note, I'm wondering any plans for another Phoenix Furia or similar kind of hardcore platformer like that?
I got that question a lot. Mm. And I'm not sure if I want to do a Phoenix Furia, Phoenix Rage again. But so long. It took us like a year and 7 months to make the first version and an extra year to make the porting for console.
Wow.
Okay. But that's cool. You guys up a bit and made a, you know, obviously Birdcakes is a totally different style game. I mean, it's still hardcore, which is cool. And like you said, it applies to new, you know, players of new skill. I'm sorry, like, you know, different skill levels. And, you know, interested to see what your guys' next project is.
Yeah, actually, we don't have like a solid style for our games, from dating simulators to shooters and hardcore platformers. So
Way back up. I want to hear more about dating simulators. There are dating simulators from you guys?
Yes, Mr. Masagi. You should look that up.
I'm assuming this is on Steam.
No, it's also on PS4.
Oh, I am.
Oh, no, Cole's like, damn. PS4.
And any thoughts of an Xbox version of that?
I don't know. I have to pitch them if they would like to do that. I don't know if you know that it's a dating simulator where you date people, and if it goes well, you will get like a massage from your controller.
Oh, okay. So reminded me of those like old school indie massage games on Xbox 360 indie games. But anyway, yeah. Go on.
Yeah. We made some. I made some different vibration patterns. So each date has a different pattern. So it's kind of it's very relaxing.
So wait, you were the culprit on some of those 60 indie games?
Sorry, what?
Were you the culprit? Like, were you the one that made it on those indie games? Like, you made some of those on 360 also? Like,
No.
Oh, okay. But the like similar style. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's cool. I think so. Yeah.
I think Scott's drunk.
I need more puns to say sober. Yeah, I don't know. I had a long day at work. That's also like being drunk, I guess. But anyway,
Cole, what were you saying?
I don't even remember now. We just got lost on Carnage being drunk
again.
And I'm focused on the whole concept of like vibration patterns and controllers. Like, why did we get left out of this? Xbox needs vibrating controller massage games too.
I mean, dating sims seem like a genre that's really underrepresented on Xbox the way it is. So just on
I think you guys would do well if you could port it. Or
yeah,
like there's only one other. I think. There's only
Kitty
one other
Powers game. Kitty Powers Smash Maker.
I think that's the only one so far. So you got to give it some competition.
Yeah. I will. I haven't thought about it, but yeah, why not? I just an email like, hey guys, what do you think about this?
Exactly.
I know. I believe My Name Is Mayo is on PlayStation as well, isn't it? I think I have it on my Vita.
It's in the Vita. It's in the PS4. It's a wild ride. Yeah.
Could we expect an Xbox version of that as well? We're missing out on so many good games on Xbox.
Yeah. I have to see. It's the same story as Mr. Masagi.
I could say for Mr. Masagi being on Xbox is the rumble triggers. You have double the rumble on Xbox. So think rumble. Of the new patterns that you can create with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Just tickle the fingertips.
Yeah, you're totally right. I definitely need to take that seriously.
like obviously, as you guys know, because it's so easy with ID at Xbox and how awesome they are and supportive, you know, it should be easy to bring it, in my opinion. I mean, I'm sure I don't know all the background stuff that goes, you know, that's hard to, some things are hard to get by for, but, you know, I'm sure you guys will be able to if you wanted to.
Yeah, you're right.
That's cool.
I want to jump back to Bird Cakes real quick.
Yeah.
I believe Cole was going to ask this as well, but you mentioned Phoenix Furia taking a year and 7 months or so to create. How long was the development on Bird Cakes from when you brought back the idea to release?
It was 1 year, but we worked like half time, so part time.
Mm.
So if I would work full time on the game, if the whole team, it could be something between 6 or 7 months.
Gotcha.
And actually, that brings me to a question as well, due to pertaining to Bird Cakes. Like, what games inspired you over time to make the game? Like, what are your favorite, you know, twin stick shooters? I'm sure you played Geometry Wars.
I think it. I believe it was Nuclear Throne.
Oh, Nuclear Throw, nice. I still wish that one was on Xbox also, but yeah, that's an awesome game.
If you can't tell, we're Xbox fans on the show.
Yeah, I notice it.
I'm not like biased, but you know, I don't mind other platforms. It's just I have an Xbox One, and that's the only of the new generation consoles I have, and I enjoy it. So, but
I'm biased. I have no shame.
All right.
But But yeah, what other twin stick games do you enjoy? I'm just curious, or like what inspired you to make it, or what else you enjoy?
By inspiration, well, the artist got the Ren and Stimpy art style. Like, he wanted to do something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Joe mentioned that on the review
John
as well.
K. I got a very John Kay vibe out of the visuals in the game, and to hear that that's kind of confirmed makes a lot of sense. I love the visuals of the game.
Yeah.
Old thank you.
Nickelodeon, hell yeah. That was awesome, that cartoon, yep.
Yeah, so, and other kind of game where we like inspired? No, I believe not.
Ah. Okay.
So who was the artist on the game?
Crazy imaginations.
His name is Diego Vasquez. He's the guy, the artist guy.
And that goes along with the, I know Joe was mentioning about the music, and it's pretty unique music. I think it goes well with the game, just like as I was saying last time on the review.
Oh, yeah.
So they did a good job with that. I mean, a few more tunes would be cool to have more music, but it's very catchy for the songs that are there. Or maybe I just didn't make it far enough. Maybe I need to get good and just beat the game and hear
it. I believe you're missing three more tracks.
Nice.
Scott, you should be playing it now, and you should give us updates on how you're doing.
Now, so you guys can hear the button pressing and raging, right?
Son of a bitch and flies.
Birdcake. I don't know.
So did you guys take Birdcakes to any conventions or any trade shows to show off at all?
Two years ago to like a really, really early concept. Actually, it was like the same concept from, the Game Jam, but with a different art to the Game Connection. And that's, on GDC, but that's more like a business show. But yeah,
I wasn't sure if you brought it to PAX or anything like that.
No PAX. I would love to, but, it's a little bit hard from Costa Rica to make that approach.
Yeah, same, I guess, about E3, right?
That's same story.
But GDC is definitely good for indie games. I mean, that's awesome that you guys were able to do that.
Yeah, that it's mainly because you're looking for some support on business-wise or maybe having good relationships or talking with a first party like Sony and Microsoft. that's the whole point of traveling there.
Yeah.
So where do you guys go next after Birdcakes? Do you guys have some prototypes in the works? Do you have any ideas of what you're going to be doing next?
Oh, yeah. We're going to make an RPG.
Ooh.
Wow.
Oh, Joe loves his RPGs. I know that much.
I do love my RPGs. I would like to hear more about this RPG if you're able to talk about it.
I can make a small account, like go deeply, but it's about a farm where bulls are being reproduced. But there are no cows, so you have to figure out why.
A farm, Cole, a farm with an RPG right at home.
I'm literally down for this. I really am. I'm like, tell me more.
All right,
and don't tell me that it's only going to PlayStation either.
No, we have plans for Xbox One.
Yeah.
Does anyone have a megaphone? We need like world exclusive SML podcasts.
I want to see if you guys will use the term farm PG instead of RPG.
Oh no, what's that? Farm PG.
How did you steal that one?
Suck it, Scott. I'm taking the puns before Scott gets the chance.
Farm PG.
Definitely a lot of variety. You did a platformer, obviously dating game, twin stick shooter with Birdcakes, and now an RPG. Cool.
Yeah.
What makes you guys jump genres so much? Is it just you don't want to repeat yourselves and you want to keep things fresh with the games you put out?
I think we get bored.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Like, for example, I know I won't do a new Phoenix Rage or Phoenix Furia because making that amount of levels, and if you have to test something, you have to pass like 2,000 levels, and it's kind of a must. Muscle memory thing, you have to play everything again, and that's really boring. Yeah, like seriously.
Yeah, that definitely is a big time commitment too, for sure.
Yeah, and I was pretty happy testing Birdcake, since you know it's randomly generated, so I got like seriously happy when I reached the final boss, because it was hard.
So you admit your game is hard.
It is.
Nice. Good to know.
How long did it take you to beat your own game?
38 minutes. That's not my best.
Like, how many attempts do you think?
Yeah. It was like 38 minutes attempts. Of practice. No, just kidding.
Oh, that was funny because, right, I reached like level 12 and I was, man, this is so hard. I need to nerf it down. And I changed some stuff and just continued. Right, level 15, still hard. I'm not getting this. some stuff again. I have to change something again. And until I was able to go to the final boss fight. So the first time I went to the final boss fight from scratch, it was like, I have no idea how many attempts. But at that point, I was like, yeah, it's ready. If I can make it, some people can make it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Some people.
Even Carnage, maybe.
I think I was looking at the leaderboards, and there were only maybe 15, 20 people on Xbox so far who've completed the game. So that's a testament to how difficult your game can be. It's really, really enjoyable, too.
Yeah, that's good to know.
What made you guys go with random generation for everything instead of handcrafted levels?
Again, I was bored. I wanted to code something new. Like, all right. So when we made Phoenix Furia, making a whole world could take me like a month or maybe a month and a half. Just one world. There are like 9 months. I mean, 9 levels. Mm-hmm. Worlds, I guess.
9 worlds, right.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
So I was like, what if I make an algorithm that can make it everything automatically? So that's the reason.
Yeah, definitely different every time. Makes it fresh. So that's cool.
Yeah, so it was just testing something new.
Are there any... Go ahead.
Damn it. Were there any special challenges?
Until now.
God damn it, Carnage!
Were there any challenges?
Yeah, were there any special challenges to going into procedural generation and everything being random that you didn't have before with static levels?
That's a good question.
Oh, yeah. For example, getting the bugs and the flies stuck like inside a block of ground. That happened a lot. So, and the thing is, if you're testing this, a new game mechanic from the enemies or a new behavior, you have to test a lot, like reset the game, a lot, because the probabilities of getting an error or finding an error were lower. I'm not sure if you follow.
I see what you're saying. Because if it was a regular level with the same every time, then it would be that error happening all the time to everyone. But here, it's like you might have a chance of not, you know, you don't have that error or something like that. I think I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and I tried. I mean, I tested the game so many times to check if there were no, for example, a game-breaking bug. I know there are no game-breaking bugs. But if everything is random, I'm not sure if there's a probability that there's a game-breaking bug. I really don't know.
It could be out there and just no one found it.
There is a game-breaking bug. It's the fucking blue one in the game.
Oh, the ghosts. Oh, my God.
The ghosts?
And the puns. But yeah, that I did find the strategy, though, Eduardo. I did find that the chili firepower kills them easily.
Well, there's a different strategy.
Yeah. Just be good without the upgrades.
you know, there's some fire torch in that world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
If you shoot those a candy or a bullet to those that fire, it will fire up, and then it will be a fired candy. So then,
of a bitch! I never thought to shoot the candles.
Yep. At first, I thought they were also just like, you know, enemies, but really like things that can help you. Yeah, makes sense.
I've been trying to kill all the other enemies and collecting up all the orbs to get the special ability so I could use it around the ghosts, because I know those take out the blue ghosts, and I could have just shot the fucking can. Oh my God.
Well, now you know.
I feel stupid now.
You know.
Son of a bitch.
Good job, guys.
The more you know.
Pretty much. Oh, my Lord.
So, yeah, you can, again, you can complete the game with the default tools or weapons.
Do that, and then I can, like, say, then I can brag about it and say, now, Eduardo, add some new achievements to the game. Beat the game without any upgrades. Why am I giving you ideas? The achievement community is going to hate me.
No, I seriously thought about that, but, yeah, too hard.
See, that's the thing with achievements. Like, there's a definitely a like, I'm obviously an achievement whore. Joe is sort of an achievement whore. Cole, I don't know. I guess you're kind of an achievement whore.
Am I just relegated to? I have almost 195,000, and I'm just relegated to kind of an achievement.
Gamer score. That's what you need to do. That's the next after the RPG or Eduardo, or make a point and click. Cole will be a point and click, or make the point and click RPG farm game. Imagine that.
That's on. I'm on par with that. I would play the fuck out of that.
Oh man, but where was I going with this? I just totally lost my
good job. Look at that. In your effort to tear me down.
Yes, achievement community. Now, like I said, some people will not care about achievements, just enjoy the game and something, and that's fine. Everyone, you know, has their own reason for getting the game and stuff. Achievements definitely make it more fun, in my opinion. But like, some people will not buy the game if it's like either too hard or has a achievement that's like broken, or you know, there's all different things out there. I'm not sure if you're familiar with any of the achievement community, but there's actually ways to add more achievements if you are interested in like doing a title update or DLC of some kind.
Yeah,
begging for more achievements.
Right now, it's pretty straightforward. You just complete, you kill them all, and you can get all of the achievements.
Yeah,
if I want to make a new achievement that people will go nuts. It will be like a flawless run. Nobody touched you. And
oh wow, oh,
that would be evil. That would be really, really evil.
Like wow, he's just like, I'm just gonna go all out.
On that note, are you guys planning any extra content for the game, or do you feel that it's good the way it is?
I don't know. We'll have to see.
That's that uncomfortable button push where we're not supposed to press and ask any more questions on that topic.
No, it's that I really like seeing people playing the game and getting feedback. And sometimes it's like, yeah, we should do this and we should add this and whatever. And that's happening a lot with our latest games.
Nice. Like
improvements and funny ads, add-ons.
Yes, hats would be amazing. I would love to buy more stuff in the store. And on that note, I would also like it to be a bit easier to earn money so you could buy stuff in the store. I feel like I saved up so much money to get that heavy weapon, and then I wasn't a fan of it, and I just cried that I spent all my money on that one.
you bought the zigzag candy. Like, it's awful to control.
It's just how slow it is, the giant spiked ball candy.
But actually, that's the best candy if you're in world number 4. Yeah.
Well, I'm not good enough to get that far.
Well, if you get that far, you'll be happy with it.
All right.
Now, I had a question too. I don't know if Joe, if you or Cole, if you unlock this, but what's the other thing that's locked in the menu? Eduardo.
Oh, yeah. Nobody asked for that. if you complete the game, there's a second mode. It's an infinite mode where you use Cherry as a player, as a character.
Nice.
Okay.
And you will notice that she is the stronger of the relationship. And
she's actually.
Yes. I know. And you can complete some achievements with her, like not achievements from Xbox, but achievements inside the game. Like, for example, kill 10 flies with skeleton flies.
I see. Like in-game awards or something.
Yeah, it's just a full new mode just hidden behind beating the game.
Yes, it's infinite. So it's infinite. All the flies you can kill, and it's completely random. You can get the flies from World 2 combined with the flies from World 6. So it's a it's a really mixed
just chaos.
Yes, chaos. So. But you're using a stronger cupcake, so that's cool.
And there are leaderboards for that as well, global leaderboards.
Yeah. Cool.
Because I saw there are global leaderboards as well for both modes then. That's cool.
Yes.
Nice. Because that's the thing also for a twin stick shooter, usually I think for almost any action game, I've played a few, I'm not going to name any names, but it's like they made a game that was fun, but there was no leaderboards. Like when you have no, they had achievements in it, but like I just think that they need, you need a global leaderboard for these kind of high scoring, hardcore games. So I'm glad you guys added the leaderboards.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, I think it's mandatory for us to make games with achievements and leaderboards as a minimum.
Yeah, because I obviously some people buy this game for fun, just to play it, beat the game and move on. But then there are more hardcore that want to go for achievements or, top ranks and stuff. So
yeah, it's cool. The achievers and the speedrunners.
Oh, speedrunners. That's right. That's another category.
Yeah, and the game, it's meant to be for speedrunners as well.
That actually brings me to one of my points that I said on the review about, obviously most of the stuff about the game I really enjoyed. One thing that was a negative, in my opinion, I was wondering what's the reasoning behind, having to go around the whole level getting the ammo after. Like, obviously, the strategy would be kill all the enemies and then collect all the ammo. It seems to just take a while. Like, is there any reason for that, or is there, something you wanted to change about that?
Yeah, well, that's something I didn't expect, since I find the bullets just around while I fight. But some people, they are looking up after a way they kill all the enemies.
Right.
And I might need some more bullets, but I don't know.
Oh, because I noticed, if I start looking for the bullets during the level, then my base will get attacked, because I got to stay fairly close to it. That's what I've found, at least. But, yeah. I know it. And then that's the thing with speed. If you're trying to speed run it, you don't want to go around the whole level collecting ammo and then move on. I guess you'll have to just go with whatever ammo you have and make it. Maybe it's harder that way. It's like Cole's favorite thing. She likes to say self-imposed hard mode, right?
Yeah.
That's what I always tend to do. I always find the hard way to play a game. Just.
I see. But yeah, you can totally get the. It's not mandatory to look up for the candies after a wave, but yeah, right now I know that it is possible to just go as fast as you can with the bullets you find around. Of course, you eventually will run out, but you have to take quick actions on getting them.
Finding makes sense.
So yeah, it was just a minor if you're making thing. A speed run. I will recommend to use the power up that shows you where are the.
For sure, the candy tracker is useful.
Yeah,
I agree. But
if you think that's something you will improve your score, if you think that double fire attack will improve your timing, not score, like the timing.
Right.
It all depends on your strategy.
Yeah, that's good. There's that layer of strategy, different variety. That's cool. Yeah, like I said, it was definitely a minor thing. Like everything else in the review, I really enjoyed the game, but that was like one thing that just I was wondering about. So thanks for clearing that up.
Scott, I'm not sure if you brought
very
it up. Scott, I'm not sure if you brought it up, but did you like the game, Scott? I wasn't sure if you mentioned that.
Twin stick shooters, I hate them. What the fuck did you bring me on this show for? No.
So Eduardo, I'm curious to know, when you're not working on creating your own games, what games are you enjoying right now? What are you playing?
Firewatch. I just started Firewatch again. This game, Forza Horizon.
Ooh, good one. Good stuff.
Yeah, I really liked it. I just like to drive. I don't mind following the races. I just like to drive.
Oh yeah,
that's what I love about the Horizon games. Is just you could fuck around as much as you want.
Yeah, but yeah, that's basically what I'm doing right now.
Nice. Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, I know we've been chatting for a while. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about with the game that we didn't bring up?
Hmm. Let's see. I believe you already mentioned everything, even the story, that there's a story, a deep story behind.
Yeah, that's, I did not expect that. Like you said before, like with the screen where you get the extra items, like there's a whole deep storyline with the character there talking about stuff. So,
well, yeah,
we like now, to get now some... I'll pay attention more instead of just shooting shit.
Yeah, but you will find that in all of our games. We like to tell stories. That's something you will. It's we're pretty coherent with all our titles. That's even the even the mayonnaise game. My name is Mayo. It has a story.
That's why I'm very much looking forward to you guys doing an RPG. I'm excited to see what kind of story. And how crazy that can get.
Oh, yeah. We have this story. We have a really interesting story.
Plus, after seeing the credits, which you guys all need to check out, and that just the storyline, you know, it could be crazy and fun like that. So I'll just leave that there. Anyone else watching or listening needs to make sure don't miss the credits screen. And you don't have to beat the game to do it, but you should have done. No, should have made it like beat the game to only see it. But no, at least anyone can see it from the menu.
If he did that, though, you wouldn't be sitting here talking about how great it is because you wouldn't even beat it yet.
Exactly.
Oh, man. I'm putting you in the spotlight. Don't you sit here and say he should have made it harder. You ain't beat it either.
I will have to get through it soon, definitely.
Yes, you will. And Scott, you'll have to keep us updated on that. But I know we've been chatting for a while. I didn't want to take up all of your day. I do thank you for coming on and chatting with us. Did you have any final thoughts that you wanted to share with us about the game or about whatever else your studio is doing?
We just like to have fun. I hope you guys have fun as well. So that's what we do.
Enjoy it. And thanks for coming on.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for coming on and chatting with us and spending time with us. Everyone else, stick around. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more show. Did you have any final words to share with us?
Yes, thank you for inviting me. It was great.
And the bird cake is not a lie.
Oh my God.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks again to Eduardo at Green Lava for joining us and chatting with us. Thanks again to Cole and Scott for hanging out as well. We do have more show to take care of. We got reviews we got to tackle. Chris Taylor, you're here. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good.
You don't sound very sure of that.
I'm sleepy. Had overtime at work, and we're finally working on that gimmick album, so had a lot of tracking yesterday.
Weren't you on the show 4 years ago talking about you guys were going to start recording that album?
Yes, it was a very exclusive reveal. And now it's going to happen at last.
We got the E3 scoops on this show from 4 years ago.
This is our Kingdom Hearts 3.
Nice. This is your Duke Nukem Forever.
hopefully
it's not your Duke Nukem Forever.
No.
That would suck.
It's probably like a Kingdom Hearts 3 or Kingdom Hearts 3.5 remix, whatever.
Some kind of weird name. 3.5 over 257 remix EX.
Yeah. Yeah. For the game.
Some weird symbol.
For the game.com.
Oh god, I have one of those.
I do too. I don't have any games for it and
really?
Or a power supply. No. I've never played it. I just have it. It was just given to me at one point.
Oh lord.
Yeah, sometimes people are just like, hey, you like old games. Here, have a thing.
Now we got to get you some games. Let's get you Resident Evil on that thing.
Give me Duke Nukem. That's like the best game on it.
Is Duke Nukem on it?
Oh, yeah, it is.
I don't even know what all games are on it.
Well, let's just talk about that then.
We probably shouldn't.
No.
But,
got a job to do.
We do. And the first game to talk about tonight is called The Lost Child, developed by Kadokawa Games, published by NIS America, released June 19th on the Switch for $49.99, or it's coming out June 19th on the Switch. Durr. Heavenly and demonic forces wage a covert war beyond human perception, and you're the newest combatant. The Lost Child is an RPG set in modern Japan. An occult journalist is thrown into the middle of a conflict between angels, demons, and fallen angels. Now he must capture defeated foes and turn them into valuable allies. This one sounds interesting, so tell me, what is going on in this game?
It's so good, but I want to open up with the way you said NIS America. I was all like, there she is, NIS America.
What do you say, NIS?
Yeah, I say NIS, or I just call them Nippon Ichi, because that's their name, but hardly anybody ever uses that one. It's just that, like, for instance, I've been playing The Longest 5 Minutes a lot lately, and that's from them as well. And so, yeah, I've just been, like, when I read about them, I read about Nippon Ichi Software, and, like, but it's NIS. I never think to pronounce it NIS, just because I always think of the words.
No,
but
I've
when
just
you said
always
it that
said
way,
NIS America.
It's just that, yeah, you said NIS America, and it instantly put the song in my head. So, NIS America came out with a game called, or they're coming out with a game, I guess. It's not out yet, called The Lost Child. And so this game, it's, and I guess Kadokawa did the, no, I'm sorry, that's a different, never mind what I was about to say. Edit that out.
Nope. Too lazy.
Yeah, that's fine. So this game is a few things, actually. It reminds me of, like, several things. One, I suppose first and foremost, it's a detective game. You are a guy who basically works for an occult newspaper. I guess that's a thing that exists, or at least it does in this world. People who go around and basically talk to people, like, you know, conspiracy theorists and tinfoil hat people and, like, you know, they take them seriously and print what they say. So I guess kind of like the Weekly World News of this world. And
man, I remember Weekly World News. Holy shit.
Right? Bat Boy, I want to believe. And yeah, so you're just this skinny anime looking handsome man who is working for a crusty old, you know, J. Jonah Jameson kind of guy. He wants pictures of the... No, he doesn't. he's a little cooler than that. But so you kind of get to know these characters, and then you kind of find out right at the beginning of the game without much explanation that this super hot lady has been following you around and bothering everybody and claiming that she is an angel. whereas, you know, she's a somewhat scantily clad, like, lady, but with an overcoat and, like, a giant hat and things like that. It's the aesthetic of this is definitely, like, anime upon anime. It's like, you know, every single new person you see, you're like, oh, there's that person. Because you're just expecting them to pop up. But anyway, so you get to know, like, this partner of yours who keeps insisting that she's from heaven, and she's, like, talking to you about it. And you can either choose, like, you most of your dialogue is through dialogue choices, so you can either choose to go along with her and kind of get more support from her, or you can, like, shoot her down and, like, try and be more realistic. So, you know, you just kind of have the three Ghostbusters branches of whether you're going to believe the supernatural stuff or not. And actually that functions in the game, because each one will raise one of your four levels of karma. So you have color-coded karma points. So, like, you know, you got your green and purple and red and blue, I think, is what they were. It's some of those. I don't know. I'm colorblind. But basically the decisions that you make and the way that you talk to people determine what kind of karma you rack up. And so that comes back into play. So once you kind of investigate through this kind of, like, totally reminds me of a DS game. Like, I don't know which one, but, like, you just go to certain areas and just start talking to people, and, like, they give you all this dialogue, and you just choose from a menu who you're going to talk to, and they just kind of show up on the screen. Like, talk to man, and then man's right there, and, like, he just says something. And, you know, various events happen, and you find yourself in a lair, L-A-Y-E-R, not L-A-I-R, although the double meaning is not lost on me. So this is where you this is actually where you do all your dungeon crawling, and where you kind of walk around and explore and stuff. And the way that's set up is almost exactly like Etrian Odyssey, only you don't have to draw the map. It's just automatically written in as you move along, which is great because there's no touchscreen to, you know, no bottom touchscreen to be messing with while you're doing things. So you walk around, and basically you run into enemies at this point, and the Angel Lady is your other partner, so you're a two-person team. And when monsters attack you, if you've not yet done so, you can capture them using this special gun that kind of looks like an old-timey camera. And, you know, you shoot, like, a special bullet at them, and it, like, Pokemon style. If the bullet, like, hits them and it reduces their life enough, then you get to capture the creature. And they start off hostile, but you use some of that karma that you've been racking up. You always get red karma at the end of battles. Like, that's your battle karma. I don't know. They don't do a great job of naming them. they're in the stat screen somewhere, but there's so much to read in this game. Anyway, so you can use that and basically unlock the creature and bring them over to your side and put them in your party. Using this other item that has limited uses within a dungeon, but can be recharged. I don't know, it's like a ghost flashlight or something. Let's call it the Ghostbusters, like the little ghost trap. So you can use your little ghost trap to put them into your party, where you can then spend all of your karma points, each one being worth a different amount for different creatures, to level up the creature at will. So as you're racking up all this karma, you can use it to make your monsters more powerful. And either you can spread it across your whole collection. Like, within the first 2 hours, I had, like, 12 monsters. So, you know, you do start to rack up individual monsters pretty quickly. And you just sort of decide whichever ones you like the most. They're all these kind of yokai. A lot of them are Lovecraftian. So, and the art is brilliant. They look creepy as hell. So
nice.
But, you know, you got, like, ones like the face in the middle of the spinning blades, and you got, like, this weird pajama dog with three human faces on its eggplant-shaped face. You know, you get all the good stuff.
Okay.
And, right. And then, like, your classics, like a bat that has the head of a horse.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you know the kind.
My nightmares.
Exactly. So, you know, you kind of collect three of these nightmare creatures, put them in your party, and raise them up. And as you proceed through the game, you start unlocking different things, like an item store, a place where you can sort of customize your beasts. Like, you can basically trade abilities, also kind of like Pokemon style. You can sort of swap abilities between monsters and sort of like customize your ideal group. And the guy who runs that shop is some guy's face on a television that is covered in cats.
So it's me.
Yeah, it's nice. Basically Joe.
Sweet. I'm in a game.
Yeah. So all the explanations aside, this game is basically a detective game, a Pokemon style game with yokai and Cthulian like horrors, with a nice sort of heaven and hell sort of supernatural vibe to it. And like, you know, there's all these handsome angel people that haven't been really revealed yet, but they all seem to function like, you know, angels and devils do, and they're all like plotting on the outskirts of the story, you know, like you get to cut away to them and see their doings. And so it's got a lot of writing. It's very interesting. Like I said, it's a detective Pokemon Etrian Odyssey. And I don't know what the last one would be.
So it's a whole bunch of genres just mashed into one.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I think at its most salient, it's a dungeon crawler with just a really cool monster collecting aspect to it.
Nice. So the $50 price tag on it, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I say go ahead and get it. I mean, $50, especially since the physical version is coming out. I mean, that would be a great way to go. This game is definitely excellent for people who already like Nipponichi stuff, but they're not into like the humorous, like Disgaea or like Longest 5 Minutes type stuff. Like, it's definitely an anime style thing that takes itself seriously. Like, the jokes are, you know, it's not jokey very much, although there are elements of humor to it. It's very much like it's a cool and like supernatural and like slightly horrifying type of game. So I appreciate that about it. I like the adult atmosphere of it. The monster collecting is really fun, and the dungeons, like, it provides a nice challenge and also gives you just a ton of stuff to do. And sometimes you actually do investigations without actually doing any dungeon crawling. Like, sometimes it's just world building. So It's a really cool all around game, and they clearly put a lot of effort into it. So I'd say, yeah, it's a full game. So, I mean, it deserves the full price.
Nice. I might have to grab that one. It sounds really, really good.
I was actually totally going to grab that one, and then you messaged me and said you had it, and I was like, oh, well, cancel that.
Well, then I guess I'll have to buy it to make up for you not buying it.
There we go. Also, buy yourself a copy of Longest 5 Minutes. It's a great game.
And I already have that one. That one's good.
It is so good.
Sounds anyway. Really fun. Mm-hmm. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Dragon Lapis, developed by EXE Create, published by Kemco, released May 31st on 3DS for $9.99. 1,000 years ago, a great battle ensued between two dragons, one gold and the other silver, where they were sealed away. Many centuries later, the silver dragon reawakens and launches an assault on a frontier village. Lucas, a royal knight serving as a guard and a descendant of the hero who once sealed the gold and silver dragons in human form, sets out on an adventure to save the world. It was Kemco, so it had to go to you. So let's hear about this one.
Yes, Dragon Lapis. I've been looking forward to this one so much. So yes, this is we're finally back with Kemco and EXE Create. However, we never did figure out how to pronounce that, I guess. But
as long as we get Kemco right, I'm happy.
Yeah, it's Kemco and they're RPG people. Yeah, this is one that is the first new 3DS game of its kind I think I've seen since Dragon Sinker, right? Or no, there was one more after that. No, that wasn't them. That was them and the other company. But this one actually kind of serves as a spiritual successor to Dragon Sinker, which is my favorite Kemco X-Create game to this point, and the only one I've actually fully beaten, so that's nice. So in this one, when comparing to Dragon Sinker, it makes a lot of sense. So if you've played Dragon Sinker, then the upgrades in this one will make a lot of sense, but I'll go ahead and go over them again. So what we've got is a standard JRPG, very just Final Fantasy style. You've got you start off with two people and eventually get four people. I don't this game seems to be pretty locked into having the same four people, and that's very typical for a Kemco X-Create game. Although Dragon Sinker had like 30 characters, and they have another game coming out that's got like 100 characters. So I feel like that's where they're taking that in that direction. And this one, they're going back to like the more standard style of having just four locked in characters. But for this one,
100, that's the new one on mobile, isn't it?
Android. Yeah. I don't remember what it's called, but I'm looking for it to come out on the new stuff or the consoles. But yeah, this one from Dragon Sinker, it basically retains the job system. So you can actually change the jobs of each of your characters, and along with it, their equipment and abilities. And of course, the ones that you learn specific to that that job can carry over into the next job. So you can end up customizing your characters into, you know, super powered all around type things. Now, the way that they do it is the new thing for Dragon Lapis for sure. They've got a thing called skill plates. So basically, they're borrowing an element of Final Fantasy X. So you remember the sphere grids?
Mm-hmm.
So they're back. in this case, each of your character has a little, a three-hole sort of master plate. And in each of those holes, well, they have to be unlocked, but, you know, you start with one and you eventually get to three. In each of those empty spaces, you can put a plate where you can expend what's called EP, which I guess, I don't know, experience points? There's also experience points for levels. So like the more recent Kemco X-Create games, this one has all kinds of points that you get in battle for all kinds of things. But this is a special set of experience points that you get through doing meeting special requirements in the battle. Like it'll say, use guard with the whole party and you get 3 EP. And then if you do and you accomplish it, then once you win the battle, you get 3 EP points. So you use those EP points like the sphere grid in that you unlock different parts of each plate, which will contain like a whole bunch of circles and stuff, and then you work towards completing it. Fortunately, it's not as maddening as the Final Fantasy X one in that if you've gathered enough points, which is likely because there's plenty of items that you can obtain that help you along, you can just press like the Y button and fill all of them out and just be done with it. And nice. So each of these plates will correspond to your job. You can gain job levels in jobs that you're not currently using. It's just that the abilities won't transfer to you until you're at that job, you know. Mm-hmm. But the stats will. So it increases your stats and also increases your different things that you can do. And it's really interesting. And you get the plates after battle and chests. Like, actually, you tend to get too many of them. Like, I had to delete several of mine because I just kept getting the warrior and priest plate, like, over and over and over again. And why was I getting the same plates over and over and over again? Because I was just straight up grinding easy enemies. Why was that? Because they brought back the lottery system.
Oh, man, I remember you love the lottery system.
They brought it back, and it's both the tickets for normal items, which you get, you know, one lottery ticket randomly every three battles or so. And if you collect 10, you can then spin the thing 11 times. So that's how I do it. And that gives you like really good common items that kind of help you along a little bit. And then, or more importantly, sell for a lot of money. But then you get the actual luck points, which you get them 10 at a time. And for every 100, you can spin the wheel and get like a really, really good sequence breaking armor or plate. Actually, they have a separate wheel for plates now. And of course, if you get, 1,000 of those points, you get to spin it 11 times, which I've already done.
Oh, God.
In the very first town. And so I got this really nice set of sequence breaking items for all my characters. And so I'm kind of breezing through the first few dungeons.
I love that you're one of those people that could be like, oh, how much time did you spend on the game? About 40 hours. How far in are you?
I'm in the second town.
Still in the first dungeon.
Yeah. So apart from that, everything else that's back. So they brought back the lottery system. They don't seem to have brought back the item eating system, which I'm actually kind of cool with, where you just combine all your items to like make them gain levels and stuff. In this one, you just straight up just get more powerful items. And actually, interestingly enough, they don't assign a specific amount of hit of like stats to an item, to a piece of armor or weapon. It's a percentage. So like this sword makes you 46% better. Like, and then this one does like 70% more attack, which is a really interesting system I'd never seen before, but that's a really good way of utilizing like the stat increases that you get constantly.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so of course, to mitigate the fact that you can just sit there and grind the easiest area of the game until they stop giving you regular experience points, but they still give you lottery tickets, the game has several levels of difficulty, so you can make the whole thing a nightmare for yourself where you actually have to do that stuff. or you can put it in normal mode and do it and then just breeze right through the game. It's up to you. It's a very accommodating game for that.
Nice.
Yeah, so story-wise, it's like all the Kemco games. It's basically you start off as a dude, you meet a lady who's got some weird thing about her. In this case, she's an ancient dragon who has a catchphrase in the form of a laugh that goes, me-hee-hee, which I'm kind of wondering how I'm supposed to read that. Like, this sounds like a witch's cackle, but she does it like every other line. It's very over the top.
Oh, God.
And then, yeah, you just meet your other two characters that you quickly forget what their personalities are like. They're both middle-aged people in this game, so that's kind of interesting. I mean, they look like teenagers, but with gray hair, which I guess that's all of us, right?
Yeah, we're all getting up there.
Yeah, so this game, and nicely enough, they've upgraded the graphics of it, so it still looks like Dragon Sinker, but instead of the solid lines for the sprites, they've given it a little bit more of a fade and a little bit more depth, so it looks like a Super Nintendo upgrade to that. So, like, think the difference between like Dragon Quest 4 and 5 when it switched to Super Nintendo, and you'll kind of have it. So I like that. Oh, and the music's really good, even though it's not Ryuji Sasai anymore.
Of course, you would know who the composers are.
Well, Ryuji Sasai is the Final Fantasy Mystic Quest composer, and they got him for Dragon Sinker. That's why the music is so amazing and, like, you know, brutal in that game. Like, 8-bit brutality, basically. This one's a little more...
I have to check out that soundtrack, then.
Yeah, I wish that it was available separately. If you find it, let me know, because I want it. But, yeah, no, this soundtrack is a lot more delicate and more sort of standard JRPG. Reminds me a little bit of Sakuraba, Motoi Sakuraba, the guy who did all the games.
That narrows it down.
Yeah, yeah.
Good stuff. But overall, $10 on this. I don't even need to ask you. It's Kemco. No. You love it.
Add it to the stack. I actually just bought. Oh, what was it called? Antiquia Lost. Antiquia Lost on the Switch, which makes it the third system I have that game for.
Good lord,
man! That's one of the ones that's not even available on 3DS. And I'm probably going to buy Dragon Sinker on it. It's just that I beat it recently, so I'm not feeling the urgency. And of course, now I have old Dragon Lapis to sort of tie me over until the next thing. So yeah, add it to the stack. Keep buying them. Buy them.
Awesome. Sounds good. Next game to talk about is called One Strike, developed by Retro Reactor and Cubic Games, published by Cubic Games, released June 8th on the Switch for $4.99. Only one strike settles the duel. Master the fighting style of each warrior to outsmart your opponents. Become the deadliest fighter in a vintage Japan. Chris, what is this one?
Okay, so this game, it's actually pretty exciting. So do you remember Bushido Blade?
Yes, I loved Bushido Blade.
So it's like Bushido Blade, but for the Master System. So it's got those, like, 8-bit graphics, and I say Master System because it's very vibrant and bright, and the characters' outlines are white instead of black, which I guess makes them more visible, but it totally reminded me of, like, something you would put on an early Sega thing. And the soundtrack is exactly a Sega Genesis soundtrack, like one of the good ones, like Shinobi 3 or something. So, and yeah, like, when you load this game up and you hear the music, like, you'll get really excited. It's, like, so, like, nostalgic and also badass. And really, that's all the music in this game. I really like the look, too. Definitely looks like an old 8-bit game. The gameplay of it is a lot like Bushido Blade in the sense that you have basically two moves that you can do. Well, you can dash from side to side, but apart from that, you can do a block, you can do an attack. basically you're the whole point is to hit the enemy once with an attack while they're not blocking. And then, of course, also block their attack before they can get a chance in. So it's a little bit of a timing game more than a serious fighting game.
Gotcha.
One hit always kills. So there's no getting away from it. The hit is either blocked or it kills you. So with that simple aspect in mind, they have 6 characters that are available. And thus, the entire game is you fighting 6 people, and if you beat all 6 of them, you win. It's the other 5 characters plus your twin. I guess every character has a doppelganger for whatever reason, because this is Mortal Kombat, I guess.
I guess so.
Yeah, at least there's not 3 of the same ninja, you know, or 12, whichever one. So in order to kind of spice things up a little bit, they have 4 different ways that you can do this whole beating up 6 people in order to win. So you've got your arcade mode. Actually, no, I'm sorry. I'm going to go down the list. You've got your one life thing, which is the most standard mode. It's basically you have to fight all 6 characters in 6 different locations, and you have to win all 6 rounds without dying. Well, if you die, you are allowed to continue, but I think in this mode, you have to start all over again. No. You just have one life, and then you get to continue. And so it's very quick. It's basically fight 6 people, and then you win. And then there's the arcade mode, which gives you 5 lives for each character. So you're fighting the same person 5 times. Whoever falls down 5 times is the loser. This one's a little cooler, I think, because it gives you a really good chance to sort of learn how to not only use your character, but also what the other characters are going to do every time.
Yeah.
And also because the last time that you kill them, it actually like does this blood spurting, like, you know, body parts falling off type of thing instead of them just falling over, which is what usually happens in the one round. So this is the round. This is the one where you get to see the fatalities.
Nice.
Yeah. And then you have the tournament where you get to pick 3 characters and what order you want to go in. And then you have to fight 3. You have to fight 6 different matches against, you know, sets of 3 characters. And that one's also kind of interesting, although it plays out quite long. And then, of course, the one where you get to just play with another player. So, yeah, the cool thing about it is that there's all these modes and stuff. The one thing about it, I don't know if it changes if you put it on hard difficulty. You have 3 difficulty settings. But when I won it, I beat the game once in every mode prior to doing this review. And all it does is it basically writes in letters on the top of the screen, like, "You rule Japan." And then it just goes to a screen where it shows all 6 of the characters, and they all have red backgrounds. And if you beat the game with a character, his background is now green. His or her. It's his or her. There's 2 ladies and 4 men. And so I think the point is to try and beat it with every character, and then maybe something else happens. But since you can roll credits from the title screen, maybe not. But for the price that it is, it's definitely a cool, like, it, for one thing, it's a great way to settle arguments in a roommate situation. Because, nice. You know, you can just challenge somebody to a duel, you know, 2 buttons. Whoever wins has to push start on the dishwasher.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound like the meatiest game, but for only $5, it can't be, you know.
Yeah, it's only $5, and actually, I think Cubic is the one that does this, but if you've bought, like, any of their other games, which is, like, 4 or 5 of the other games, like, one of which I've already reviewed, I don't remember exactly which titles, then you get, like, 20, you get, like, a big chunk taken out of the price, so... Check to see what the price is for you, because it might be very cheap if you've already bought one of these other $5 games.
Nice. Good stuff. I'm trying to look up and see what the price is for me.
Okay. Yeah, it'll say on the purchasing screen, like, if you bought this,
50% off, $249 if you own one of their other games.
Yeah. And what are those games? Does it say?
Oh, God, I forget them all. like Astro Bear's Party, Robonauts.
Yeah, Robonauts is the one I bought.
Shit, I forget what else.
There's like one of them that I reviewed earlier, but I don't remember which one.
I don't know. Anyway, we got one final game with you to talk about. That is called Legendary 11, developed and published by Eclipse Games, released June 8th on the Switch for $9.99. Legendary 11 is an epic arcade soccer game inspired by the golden age of soccer spanning the 70s to the 90s. Chris, what is Legendary 11?
I don't know where they... I guess it's a soccer game. football, I guess you call it, in other countries.
Football.
Not American football. It's the ball that you kick with your feet. I know there's a lot of confusion there. all the characters do look 70s, but the game doesn't really advertise that to you directly. Like it's in the description for when you're going to download the game. But once you start it, there's no story. There's not really anything. Like you just choose your mode and start playing the game. But everybody is like, got the kind of like the froze and like the longer hair and stuff. So I guess that's what they did. So yeah, this is basically a stylized soccer game. What I like about it is that it is of the generic sort. That is to say, it's not tied to any particular roster. There's no knowledge of soccer required to actually play it, which is huge bonus for me because I have no knowledge of soccer or football. I know the basic rules and mostly from just playing other video games. Video games are good. So it's one of those kind of things where you get into the round, kick off the soccer ball, and then controls are very simple, which is nice. You basically push B to access to take over basically the player that is closest to the ball, which I like that they choose that automatically because I know some games that you sit there and like scroll through and it's just like scrolling through people and you're like, I want that one. The ball's getting away. Now they passed me. And then, use Y to steal the ball, A to shoot, and, other kind of factors in play. If you're playing a friendly game, you can actually leave the tutorial on for the entire game. And I needed to in order to learn this thing just to get a sense of the rules. Like, I don't know what cornering is, I didn't know but the game's nice enough to like sort of give you that edge,
Yeah.
A little bit like that beer league hockey game,
Yeah.
So yeah, I found myself, I tried to do the championship, whatever. I played as like the team that's like rated one of the best teams, like Italy or something like that. And well, you have to unlock different cups in that before you can like really get into using all the teams and stuff. But I basically used the best one against one of the worst ones, and I still got my ass handed to me.
Nice. So
then I tried the friendly match. I put all the easy, I put the easy difficulty beginner thing. Picked the like best, like it was like Italy or something, like one of the big 5-star like awesome teams against like, I don't know, Colombia or something, like a 2-star team. And then I made it snow, and then like I started playing, I was like, all right, yeah, finally I'm getting some goals here, and then the game crashed. I know, early copies. Yeah, I had that happen though. Like I've had that happen with like the last 3 games I've played though, so I don't know.
The beauty of pre-release software.
Hooray. Well, also the retail software I bought happened as well, but that apparently it's a known issue, but that's getting out of the point. So the good thing about this game is that it does make it very easy to learn how to play soccer, and you can set up some games where it's a lot more forgiving, so you can kind of learn the lay of the land. And of course it has couch multiplayer, so that's really nice. You can do 2 players, and just with the Joy-Cons, it's really simple. And the only thing, like the things about it, basically the looks of the game are pretty dated. Like, you can see from the crowds where it's like, it's 3 different people with 2 different animations. And it's almost jarring how early this game looks. And like players kind of dart across the field. Some of them just straight up teleport. And different janky things happen like that. So, like, clearly this isn't a huge budget game. Also, there's no background music in the actual soccer game. It's only on the title screen. And that only disappointed me because the title screen music was very good. So I would have liked to hear more of it. But so aesthetically, it's not the strongest thing, but I imagine for the price, it's probably the best soccer game that is available at the moment on a system that doesn't really have a whole lot of sports games on it.
Yeah, it sounds like a good game for pick up and play casual gamers.
Yeah, and again, it's good for learning. And the aesthetics are pretty fun, like I said. And, you know, you can do things like make it thunderstorm or snow, or, you know, you can choose your referee, which means nothing to me. I guess that's a thing. It's just like, it's right there at the beginning. It's just like with the difficulty, it's like, choose your referee, and it just has names. It doesn't say anything about them. Like, this guy sounds nice. Which one sounds like he likes Italians the most? So maybe that's important.
Well, overall, $10 on this one. What do you think?
It's certainly a $10 soccer game. If you like soccer and you got $10 to spend on a game, I think this is the one.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, Chris, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. A lot of games that you had to take care of today.
I know, right? And now I think I'm done.
You are.
I've had Lost Child for like a month.
Yeah. And now it's E3 week, so there ain't shit coming out. So we get to relax for a little bit. Yay!
Ah, yeah. Maybe I can actually play one of those games I bought with
good
money.
Good luck.
Yay.
Well, Chris, do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Metal Wolf Chaos. It got announced on PS4.
Yeah, we'll be discussing that next episode.
Heck yeah. I'm so excited. And the reason why is that I am the president of these great United States of America.
All right, next game to talk about is called The Banner Saga 2, developed by Stoic, published by Versus Evil, released June 7th on the Switch for $19.99. As the world continues to crumble around you, only one bastion of hope remains, but getting there will require strong leadership, hard sacrifices, influencing new heroes, and sound strategy in combat. Your saga continues now, and that person's saga that is continuing now is Len Stewart. How are you doing, and how is this game?
I'm doing good, man, and the game is great. I mean, it's a lot more fantasy-driven than the first one. In that, I mean, like, there's more, like, crazier shit that happens in the second one than the first one. I love it.
So what do you do in this game? What picks up from the original game? How does the sequel treat the original game?
Okay, so basically, you start out kind of right where the last one ended. But depending on your choices in the first one, you either play as Rook or his daughter in the second one. So I played as Rook through the second one. And I thought it was like really like, I don't know. I felt like the choices mattered more in this one than it did in the first one in a way. Just because, like, it seems like the game, you can actually continue on from the first one, like, keep all your levels and items and stuff, mm-hmm. which I thought was really cool. And, the more fantasy-driven stuff gives you, like, kind of wilder, choices to make, I feel, in the second one versus the first one. And so, like, I just, I would always, like, make, like, multiple saves just so I was like, okay, well, if I had do this wrong, at least I can go back and, you know, mess with it again. basically, a lot of the story picks up in the second one. Now you understand, like, There's like this evil snake coming, and there's all kinds of unworldly type things happening. You meet a new race of people, these like centaur type guys, and it leaves you off. Like, I just finished it last night, and I feel like the game just leaves you off at a point where you're like, oh my god, there's gonna be a third game, you know, and I gotta play it right now. So I'm really excited now, like, to see this third one.
I can tell. I know you really enjoyed the first game. It sounds like you really enjoyed the second one. How long is the second game compared to the first?
It's about the same. It's about 11 hours, just like the first one is. But, there's just so much that they pack in to the 11 hours that it feels like a longer game. Like, I feel like I've been playing it for a week straight, you know? But, wow. Like, the 11 hours don't feel like 11 hours, like, of game time to me for some reason. It feels like, I don't know, I feel like I've actually had a full game experience, you know?
Nice.
'Cause 11 hours, you know, you put that down on paper in your head, and you're like, yeah, that isn't all that much.
Yeah, but if you stretch it out that far, I mean, it adds up.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt like the battles were a little bit more challenging in this one. Like, towards the end of the game, you have to fight this king, or at least in my game, you had to fight this king. And the guards, like, make it almost impossible to, like, kill the king, because they're always trying to protect him and get in your way of actually getting him. And based on that fight, there's a choice you have to make earlier, which is, like, you either take out the archers from the side that are trying to pick you off as you're trying to kill the king, or you're going to get rid of the obstacles in the way, or you're just going to charge right in. I died in the first fight like that, and then I like got rid of the obstacle, and then I could like, totally like kick his ass. It was great. It was really cool.
Nice. That sounds awesome. It sounds like it's all positive stuff so far. Are there any negatives or gripes that you had with the game?
No, not really. Actually, you know, the gripes that I had with the first one kind of follow through to the second one, which was the UI, like descriptions of items and stuff like that, just seemed like way too small and handheld for me. But they did like kind of fix the loading times, which I kind of was pissed off that was happening in the first one. But the second one, it doesn't seem like the loading times are as bad, so I really like that.
Nice.
Yeah. I felt like the voice acting in the second one was a little worse off than the first one. I don't know why. I just like the first one's voice acting a little bit better than the second one. It just felt more believable to me. The second one, it felt like it tried a little harder, you know, than it needed to. But I do really like the overall game, just like the first one. I felt like the character designs were a little bit more thought out in the second one, too, where it's like the same art style carried over, but they kind of like made more guys, you know, rather than like color swapping. And I really love that, you know, they really kind of re-engineered on the second one, like a lot, you know, especially like with the environments seem to be more like colorful and just kind of warpy in comparison to the first one, you know. Yeah.
So overall, I wanted to know, how is the performance of the game on the Switch as well?
Performance on the Switch is really good. Like I said, you know, like the loading times were a thing in the first one, but I felt like the second one didn't really have that issue. It seemed to play just as good as the first. My problem with the first two is that the touch controls were kind of weird, but the second one seemed to clear that up, which I was really glad to see. There was like, I could play like the entire game by touch if I wanted to.
Nice.
So I thought that was cool. Yeah.
Nice. Well, only question I have left is $20 on this one. What is your verdict?
Totally get it. Totally get it. It's worth it. Even if it is 11 hours, don't make that like, you know, the staple of whether you should buy this game or not. Because those 11 hours, like I said, it feels like a 20-hour game. You know, you can kind of expand on the hours that you play, which is really weird. You know,
yeah.
It's like you enter a time warp when you play this game.
Now, I just thought of one more question. If someone hasn't played the first game, are they okay jumping into this one, or should they definitely start with the first?
They got to play the first, because there's a lot of story points that connect to the first, and without that, you're just going to be lost.
Makes sense. Totally makes sense. So I guess that is it. Len, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. How excited are you for the third one?
Oh, I can't wait to play the third one. I really can't. I mean, these guys, like, they got to get it out on Switch, like, soon. Because I'm like, and I'm going to end up probably playing the second one before I play the third one again. So.
Nice. Well, do you have any final thoughts to sum it all up?
No, I just really love the Banner Saga. I can't wait. I can't wait to play the third one. I can't wait to complete my saga here, you know?
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Might and Magic Elemental Guardians. It released May 31st by Ubisoft Entertainment on iOS and Android as a free-to-play game with in-app purchases. Enter the world of Might and Magic Elemental Guardians, a fast-paced strategy RPG based on the medieval fantasy realm of Might and Magic. Journey through the enchanted lands, collecting fierce and fantastic elemental creatures, and evolve a team of mighty warriors to summon to battle on the path to victory. It is a mobile game, so Jacob Garner, you are here. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
Doing all right. It's middle of E3 week. Things are hectic. Things are crazy. So I'm looking forward to next episode, but I got to deal with you now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm as good as I can be.
That's fair. I mean, like I'm still excited about Crackdown 3 and, I'm holding out on Anthem. Like, I mean, it's BioWare. So like, I'm kind of like excited about it. But at the same time, I'm still sore over Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yeah. Well, they didn't. So, it was a different studio that made Andromeda.
I know, but it's the pain is still there. You know, I still don't know what happened to the Quarian ship.
That's what I'm just telling myself the whole time. The pain is still there. Just talking to you.
You're a dick.
So anyway, Might and Magic Elemental Guardians. You should tell us about this game.
So. All right, so Might and Magic Elemental Guardians, it's pretty much as you just described, which, by the way, like you just said that at like a speed of light. So what it is that you're collecting all these different creatures, and then you have to use them strategically in all these little battles, and you go through all these different worlds and like lands, I guess they would be. And, you know, like some of the enemies you face against, like with your little, I think they call them creatures, I think, or monsters, which it's kind of weird because some of them are obviously like human things, like knights and like ninja assassin looking people, but then other ones are like little pets, but they still call them everything creatures, which I find kind of weird. But, yeah, I'm not going to disagree on that one, but, but they call it a fast-paced strategy RPG, which, I mean, it's correct. I mean, but the thing is that, like, this game type is not exactly new. I've already been playing this for years with EA's Star Wars Galaxy of Heroes, and then WB Interactive released a DC Universe-related one, like, last year, I think. I don't know. I quit it, like, 3 months in. So it's not like this format's exactly new. But the thing is that it's a much prettier, and there definitely seems to be much more variety with like the different creatures that you can collect. The battle animations are totally solid. I was really impressed by that, along with the level designs for the different battles and worlds and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you like that kind of game, but you've also gotten kind of bored with it, because I'll be honest, both the Star Wars and the DC Universe thing, it's almost like an old school, like turn-based RPG. And like the animations are not that exciting to look at. This thing, like the camera, like weaves in and out of like, you know, your like little creature running up and pouncing on the enemy and stuff like that. It looks really nice. And like, if you've played this kind of game before, everything's intuitive. Your character has two to three different attacks. You know, some enemies you're going to be strong against, other ones you're going to be weak against. And so you have to figure out ahead of time, you know, like, oh, should I, you know, enter in this kind of creature? And then of course you can level up your creatures. So then they gain new abilities, and, some of them, they like evolve into like, stronger versions of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of takes like a Pokemon, like, I don't want to call it Pokemon, but it kind of is. I don't know. Like none of my creatures are strong enough to have reached that area yet. But like, 'cause the other thing is that like you are awarded a new creature almost every single day, whether you wanted it or not. So like pretty quickly, you're going to have a menagerie of all these different creatures that you can look at. And then on top of it, if you pre-registered for this game through Ubisoft's website and all that kind of stuff, which it turns out when you had come to me with this game, I had already pre-registered for it like 6 months ago. I totally forgot about it.
Nice.
Yeah. And so like when I started it up, it's like, you'll get your pre-register creature. And I'm like, oh, that's fun. So Apple users got this thing called Infinite Loop, which is what I have. Infinite Loop totally sucks. There's nothing good about this creature. Android users got this creature that looks like the Android mascot. I have no idea how it plays. I'm hoping Android users have better luck than iOS users. But other than that, like, it's a freemium game. I mean, like, yeah, you can make it through with, you know, doing all your stuff per day. Like, you get your energy allotment and, you know, you can only do so many fights per day and all that other kind of stuff. And of course, if you want to, you can buy crystal shards, you can buy energy, you can buy all the different stuff, and get ahead in the game. But, you know, if you play these kind of games wisely, you can spend almost no money on them.
No. So is this one worth downloading and checking out?
Yeah, I would definitely recommend checking it out. Like, if you, as I said before, if you found this genre kind of stale before, I definitely invite you to like jump back in with Might and Magic Elemental Guardians. If you're new to it, the game does hold you by the hand from the start. So even though like you're totally getting your ass kicked at the beginning, like it's like, oh, come on, guy, you can do this. Like, like you will not die during your first fight. Like no matter how badly you're messing up. But the game does guide you, and it will take the time to explain everything to you. So whether you're new or whether you're experienced, I definitely recommend checking it out. It's a really impressive game to look at, on mobile. The graphics are definitely top notch for this genre.
Nice. Sounds good. You do have one more game to talk about. That is called Feist. It released May 30th on iOS and Android by Finji and Last Chance Media as a free-to-play beginning. There's also a full game unlock with 7 additional levels available for only $3.99. Feist allows the story of a fragile little fur creature and its desperate attempt to rescue its mate from the clutches of a pack of malicious predators. The journey to the heart of a mysterious forest soon becomes a savage and merciless fight for survival, as everything in this mesmerizing but deadly environment wants to eat you. Jacob, what is this one?
Oh, well, that's news about that story, because the game doesn't actually, like, tell you what's going on. Oh, well, that helps a little. I'm serious. The game is very vague. Like, If you played through Limbo, which is a very similar game that got released like what, 2013 or so, like
a while
early
ago.
On, like a very long time ago, you're immediately going to start making comparisons to that game. Limbo gave you more of a story than Feist. I'll be honest, like I'm just going through it and it's like, all right, everything wants to kill me in this forest. Like, you know, it's like there aren't nearly as many conclusions to draw. So anyway, it's going to be real hard to discuss it without like talking about Limbo forever. So,
Figure it out.
It's a strategy platformer, and you have to move through this forest where pretty much everything wants to kill you. There is big, like, you know, there's these big insect things. There's these like little tiny, balls of fluff with spears that want to kill you. Like, you're going to quickly discover everything in this forest is terrible, but you have to go about it strategically. So, you know, you can sometimes like duck into logs, or like you can use cover from either like the logs or the mushroom heads, stuff like that. Or you can bypass stuff by jumping over branches, that kind of stuff. But you have to figure out how each different forest animal is going to attack you. Mm-hmm. And what to do next. But the problem is that the game doesn't really give you a chance. So you're going to die a lot in this game. And my problem with it was, is that I couldn't always tell when it was going to save. And so, because you can't just you can't just save it automatically. The game will do it for it. I mean, you can't manually save.
Yeah, it's just an auto-save.
Yeah, the game's going to do it for you. And so hopefully when it bounces you back, it's like, you know, near where you last died. Otherwise, you're going to have to keep playing through a lot of frustrating parts. And it's just, as I said, the game doesn't really give you a lot of time to think about it. So you're, it's almost like Limbo became a speedrunner in a way, without actually being a speedrunner. Like, does that make sense to you? Like, it requires a lot of muscle memory. Like, you know, oh,
yeah, it's the pattern and learning from it, trial and error.
Right. You're going to be doing a whole lot of trial and error with it. And so not only do you have to figure out the patterns of the animals, but of course you also have to figure out your environment too, because like, are there boxes nearby that I can push? You know, other times, like there's going to be a time where you're actually going to use an enemy against another enemy. But of course you can't do it until like, you know, you push that box or you throw that pine cone, and the game doesn't take the time. Like, the game does not hold your hand at all. When you first start, you're given two controls, left and right. And you're just tossed into the world pretty much. And then eventually it introduces the jump, and then you have to figure out, oh, this, you know, this thing that's hanging up above my head, this spider-like thing, this thing's bad. I have to avoid it. And then it just, it goes downhill from there in terms of your character's, you know, wonderful life. The controls aren't bad, but the thing is that it definitely, if you've got sausage fingers like Joe and myself, then you're going to have some problems with the jump buttons, definitely. I forgot to check the game out on the Game Vice.
You son of a bitch.
I know.
It's the whole purpose that we got you that fucking thing for review, is to use it on games like this.
I could do an update if you'd like.
I should make you do it right now, but then you'd have to end the call.
Well, we could edit her back in later.
Nah, I'm too lazy.
Okay. So I forgot to check the Game Vice to see whether that would work with it or not. Something like a Game Vice would definitely help with this game, but
you know what? Fuck it. Try it right now. Hang up, try it, and come back.
All right. Okay. Give me a moment.
Okay, so you're back. Does it work with the Game Vice?
It does work with the Game Vice, and holy crap, it's a lot better.
You stupid asshole.
Sorry. But on the plus side, it also reminded me of something I forgot to bring up during, like, when I was talking about the game. Like, okay. One of the things I'm kind of like, about. It does, like, you can take multiple hits from enemies during this game, but there's no like life gauge that you're given. And so it seems like some enemies, like when you get hit by them, it hurts more than other enemies. And so you have no idea how much you're actually, like how much damage you're actually taking and how much you can actually like still take before you like straight up die in the game. So that adds another level of frustration to the game. On the plus side, the visuals and the music are beautiful. So if you were looking for something like Limbo, for the iOS, Vice is an excellent option.
Okay, so the two questions I have. Number one, is it worth downloading the free version with the...
Yeah, totally.
I guess the beginning. And then is it worth the $4 for the extra levels for the full game?
Well, downloading the demos, it's going to tell you... Like, I mean, if you play it, you're going to know whether you like that kind of game or not. Personally, I thought the $4 was definitely worth it. But I do like the fact that there is like a demo to it, which you don't always see very much anymore. So, definitely try it before you buy it. And if you like it, $4. Great. Like, that's a great price for it.
Cool. Sounds good. Jacob, it is always tolerable having you on chat about this stuff.
I'm glad I could bring even more misery to your life.
You're so good at it.
And to the listeners, you know, I think that there's probably always like a 20-minute period where the listeners just like skip right over something in the podcast. I would like to think that I'm that part.
You are the skippable 20 minutes.
I bring something to the table.
Not really. Jacob, do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up?
Not really, other than I'm excited. I won a Tomb Raider poster.
And?
The local cheap seats theater, they started giving away their posters up on Facebook. I won Tomb Raider.
All right, final game to talk about tonight is called Robothorium, roguelike RPG, developed by Goblin Studio, published by Goblin Studio and Whisper Games, released June 7th on Steam Early Access for $14.99. Robothorium is a futuristic turn-based roguelike RPG where all your choices will have a direct impact on your revolution against humankind. Gather your team of robots, choose your allies, and lead your troops to the next robot's age. Checking this one out, Ian Griffin, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm not doing too bad. And yourself?
Yeah, I'm alive. Kicking, feel better than I did last episode, that's for sure.
Awesome sauce.
I'm alive.
Yay, everything is awesome.
Almost, maybe, kind of. But close we're in the enough. Middle of E3, so fucking whatever. Let's just get through this shit. there's more important things to take care of.
I know, right?
So what All is right, Robothorium?
So Robothorium, as you said, is pretty much a roguelite with very heavy tactical combat. And are you? Oh, sorry, I thought I cut you off.
Nope.
Yeah, and basically the premise behind the story is you are an awakened AI. I guess you could say you're sort of like a benevolent fledgling Skynet. That's honestly not far from the truth. I mean, you're basically a self-aware AI that gets liberated from some sort of like archive or whatever. It's not really too relevant, but you are charged with basically freeing your robo brethren from the oppressive tyranny of mankind because, you know, you're far enough in the future that robots have gained sentience and, you know, history repeats itself and, you know, civil rights for robot kind. Despite the fact that most of the robots you consort with and order around are walking death machines. But, you know, that's beside the point. And of course, you know, humans are assholes. But, yep. And basically, you're just trying to achieve your revolution. And, you know, in order to do that, you pick these missions. And I guess this is where the roguelike comes in, although I guess it's kind of a very generous description, but you basically scoot your team of robots around the map trying to accomplish, air quotes, goals. And along the way, you'll run to representatives of different factions who try to influence how you carry out your robo-revolution. I mean, there's one faction that's basically like, you know, They're looking towards peaceful coexistence, you know, brotherhood between man and robot. You know, we leave you alone, you leave us alone, we can, you know, accomplish much more together than split apart. And then opposed to them, you get these like hardcore robo supremacists who are like, all flesh bags must die because fuck those guys. They're weak. They're imperfect. You know. You know, I mean, and if you really want to go the hardcore Skynet route, you know, those are the guys that you kind of favor towards.
No.
And I'm trying to think of who else is there. That's right. There's this weird little side thing. Like, basically, there's a faction of cyborgs who are arguably half human, half robo, so they kind of straddle that fence. But opposed to them are these radical scientists who are actually trying to work on a cure that was produced from organic and machine hybridization. So basically you can either help out the cyborgs and perpetuate their plague ailments, or you can perform some arguably unethical actions for the scientists that will help the cyborg guys in the long run.
Interesting.
You know, like the first mission that involves them is basically, you either help some cyborgs escape a facility or you kill them and harvest their body parts for study. There's no in between. It's either one or the other. And that's, you know, and that's
talk
sort of the
extremes.
Weird
extremes.
Yeah. And then I think the last faction is basically like this mercantile, like black market profiteer guy who honestly doesn't give a flying fuck about anything other than making cash. So as long as the money's flowing, he'll help out whoever the fuck has the coin to earn, you know, to earn his services.
The American dream.
Pretty much. But, yeah. And, you know, and that's kind of interesting. Like it, but, let's see, but you know, getting into the game itself, it's the first thing that I kind of had to deal with was the fact that like at first I thought you sent me another mobile game because graphics wise, there's not a real whole hell of a lot going on. It's pretty simple, you know. I mean, there's not really a whole lot of visual aesthetic to it. I mean, there's a nice style to it, and on a side note, you know, the music to the game is actually rather pleasant. But basically, you know, there's not a whole lot of animation to it. Your robots are pretty, you know, graphically speaking, your robots are pretty simplified. And, you know, when they perform an action, it's basically I wave an arm or I kind of do like a 10 frame cannon shot. But, you know,
kind of like old school JRPG battles.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, and that's the thing. Like, all your guys are stacked up on one side. All the bad guys are stacked up on the other side. And that's, you know, that's the configuration that it's always at. I mean, and you can, you know, there's two lines and you can set up where you want your robots positioned because, you know, on the upside, there is a very diverse collection of robots that you can choose from. And each one has sort of a specific role. Like, you know, this guy's obviously your healer. This guy's obviously your tanky dude, because, I mean, basically, like, he's a fuckload of hit points, and he's all designed about helping other people. This guy is, you know, obviously a damage sort. This guy's a damage sort of a different type. And then you have, like, another couple bots that are, like, have all sorts of weird niche-y utilities that can buff your dudes or crap on the bad guys. And, you know, and like I said, you know, when I first glanced at it, I was like, oh, shit, this is a mobile game. This is going to be shallow. This is going to be boring. But, I mean, there is a lot of micromanaging involved in a good way, because each robot, as they level up, they have these talents that you can purchase, and, you know, trying to figure out, you know, a good way to, you know, and it's a great way of customizing how you want to play the robots and how you want them to piece together into a cohesive team. You know, it's actually a really interesting way of, you know, like, for example, well, I mean, it's there's a lot of synergy, and in a very good way. I mean, the developers really kind of latched onto a solid means by which, you know, they're not necessarily one note. Gotcha. They can be if you want them to be, but I mean, it's a conscious decision you make as you're boosting them up. And, you know, you can always reassign these points if you need to shift how they need to fight in a given battle. And, you know, there's also like a lot of equipment that, you know, can be shared or is exclusive to certain robots to help, you know, fill out their role or roles as needed. And this kind of leads into like one of the downsides, at least for me, is that every now and again, like after a couple of battles in a mission, I'll accrue up like a bunch of gear. And then I'll probably spend as much time, if not more time, going through all of the equipment, trying to figure out which is quote unquote better or which is worse, or do I want to give to this guy or do I want to give that guy? And I remember when I was streaming it, I'd probably spend about like maybe, you know, like 5 to 10, you know, like five minutes or so in a battle, and then 10 minutes going through all the loot afterwards. So it's, in a way, I guess it's kind of a good thing, but it kind of kills the pacing of the game when, you know, you have to spend that much time. You know, I'm trying to think, I guess a baseline comparison, like, you know, like I usually kind of use is for like Final Fantasy Tactics, like, because to me, that's probably one of the best tactical games I've played. And it's like, why do I like this? Why don't I like this? It's like, well, yeah, how is this handled in Tactics? You know, like it, but anyways, yeah. So, and there's also like a market, and there's also a workshop where you can collect, you know, every time you win a battle, you collect miscellaneous parts and stuff. You can go into the workshop. You can craft your own gear for your robots that have all sorts of beneficial effects or non-beneficial effects. It's just a matter of how you want to build them. As far as min-maxing their stats, you know, that kind of thing. You know, and the factions themselves, like as you go through and play the game, you know, and there's different things you can do that will appeal to these factions. Like, for example, in one level, I came across a bunch of engineers. And they're like, please don't hurt us. We're not here to fight. You know, we're just doing our fucking job, man. And you basically can, like, let them go, kill them on the spot. And I forgot what the third option was. It was, like, some really weird neutral option. But I decided, just for the sake of argument, to let them go. And immediately, I got a message from the pro relations guy, like, oh, that was a really awesome decision. You know, I really respect you for that. And then the robot supremacist is like, oh, you're a fucking pussy. You should have killed them all.
Nice.
And the cool thing is that later on in a different mission, I run into them again. And because I let them go, they're like, oh, man, remember what you did. Here, have some weapons. And they hook you up with some gear. It's like, oh, okay. So your choices do have some rather pleasant or unpleasant, depending on how you want to see it, ramifications further on down the road. And you know, as you wrap up with the factions, they can kind of give you special bonuses, and it's possible to be disliked by factions, but I haven't gotten far enough to where anyone hated me. So I'm not sure if
you got to work harder at it then, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, moving on. One thing that is rather interesting that I think is kind of a very cool option is that there is actually a, like a PvP mode where basically you can take your bots as you played them in the game, and you could challenge other players' teams.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, it's like the arena mode, where basically, you know, it's just kind of a Royal Rumble. You know, so example, if you got the game and I have the game and we played it for a bit, I can have my robot squad challenge your robot squad, and we'll just go at it and see who wins.
Nice. So, in summary, it's a deep game, a lot of stuff to do, a lot of micromanaging, a lot of loot, has PvP modes. So, I'm curious to know, $15 on this one, what do you think?
Well, there are some pretty heavy negatives. I mean, it can be very, very repetitive given, you know, like I said, the nature of the graphics kind of really limits what you see and what you do. I mean, you have all these guys over here, all those guys over there, and they just sit there and pew-pew in each other's faces until someone wins, and then you move on. And also, another problem is that the enemies scale with your team. So, if you're having trouble on a level, there's nothing you can do about it, because if you go off and do something else, come back, they're still going to be as hard, if not harder. And there's also some RNG events that can exacerbate that difficulty and make things like impossibly difficult. Like, I remember one time I had to restart because shit went awry and the boss cornholed me, and restarting an entire mission sucks ass because it's a pretty big time investment. But I would say, let's see, because it's $14.99, and I did notice that it is currently on sale for $13.49. A little bit of pocket change off. If it's the sort of game that sounds like it can tickle your fancy, I would say try it. If you're not really into a tactical, I mean, there is a lot of micromanaging. If it's not something that you're into, I would move on, honestly.
Makes sense.
Because, I mean, it is kind of that, I mean, that $13, $14 price tag is kind of that borderline where it's like, you could find something better.
Yeah.
But if it's the sort of game that you're really into, I think you could definitely get, you know, $13, $14 worth of entertainment out of this.
Sounds good. And if you are interested in picking it up on sale, the discount $13.49 only goes until the 14th. So you've got about a day or two left as of when this releases to chop chop and get on that shit.
Alrighty.
Good stuff. Well, Ian, always good having you on, chatting about this and everything else. It's been a long show, so we're going to wrap this up. Ian, do you have any final words to end this episode of the show?
Down with the flashbacks.